Welcome to episode, we think, number 59 or something like that of If You've Come This Far. Sean and I continue to do this, and we're a little slow this year. We've been busy for a couple months, and we're catching up on some things. But so this is an interview we did with Shayna James. I hate to say it, but it was back in the spring. But it's no less relevant now than it was then. Right, Sean?
Yeah, and back-to-back spring recordings that we're just publishing now in the winter. And you say, we think it's 59. First of all, it's not we. You think it's, you're the one looking at the numbers, and you're, you know, you're this accountant numbers guy, and you think it's 59. I would expect you to be more precise, my
Actually,
friend.
Actually, don't you dare accuse me of being an accountant. That's rude.
It's something like
and
that.
Disrespectful.
to the accountants that might be listening to this.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Damn it.
That's nice.
I will edit
That's
that
nice.
Out. I will edit
right.
that out.
That's nice.
No, but here's the thing that trips me up. I won't get into it, but there was the episode we did on with Zen Parenting and Todd and Kathy.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you count that. So that's why I'm sort of waffling and it's lame.
But that's but we were on theirs. We never published it on ours, which, you know,
we should
again
have.
Is another. Yeah, we should have.
It was a fun conversation because yeah. Kathy is so smart and Todd is Todd. And I'm just kidding.
Yeah, Todd's. Yeah. I actually was on Shayna's podcast. Not sure you listened to that.
I did.
Did you?
I swear to God I did.
Oh,
why would I lie to you?
I don't know.
I did because it was the East. A, I wanted to hear you on someone else's podcast, which we could stand more of. But also, that was my way of sort of getting to know Shayna before I hopped on the call with her.
Did you listen to it on 2x speed, though? Just my parts.
You know,
just my parts.
I mean, look, yeah, exactly. I kept toggling back and forth.
2x for Sean, 1x for Shayna.
Anyway, enough about us and our
Shayna James is awesome. She wrote a book called Honest Sex, which is really good. She's a counselor and a coach, works a lot with men. Got introduced to her through my relationship with Jed Diamond. And there's so much in what I would say is the foundation of her philosophy around self-awareness, confidence. Just where she comes from is very thoughtful and very engaging. And I think there's a lot in the experiences as she's done her work, specifically with a lot of men, that our audience can learn from as we talk through these issues with her.
Well, first of all, say the name of the book one more time.
Honest Sex.
Honest Sex. And and I don't know that I remembered that we got connected with Shayna via Jet. Can you remind me how those two intersect?
She is part of the Moonshot for Mankind, which is a initiative, a nonprofit that Jed started. People may have listened to the episode with Jed, and she was part of his kind of core group. But I read the book, and the title Honest Sex I think is really good because, you know, honest is an interesting word. I mean, sometimes when I catch myself saying honestly, I'm like, okay, does that mean I'm lying all the other times? You know, it's about communication, it's about engagement, it's about self-awareness, all important things. And we're going to engage Shayna in the Eldridge program that we're launching. She'll be, you know, creating a post about love, sex, and intimacy after 40 that will be in our first newsletter. So yeah, we're excited to engage her in some of the work we'll be doing there too. So.
Hey, it's been a minute since I'm not even sure if you've mentioned it on this podcast, but can you maybe just say a couple things about this Elder Project?
Yeah, so the data shows that there's a lot of struggles for men as they go into the second half of their life, maybe retiring from a job or going through a divorce or any variety of different changes. And it also has been expressed to me by many of the men that, you know, come to our places who are older, 40s, 50s, 60s. And we just thought it'd be important to kind of focus some efforts on that segment of the population and their interests and challenges and life situations may be very different from somebody who's in their early 30s, 20s, no doubt. So, so we decided to focus a whole program on that, and it'll involve content and instruction, cohorts, talks, all of that to be released in the month ahead.
Oh, that's awesome. Nice work.
And let me just say real quick, because this is a long intro. We called it elders. Some people are like, oh, what are you calling it elders for? I don't see myself as an elder. It, to a certain extent, it's aspirational. It's the idea that, you know, as we get older, and I would say this for men and women, it's about, you know, how are we giving back to the next generation? How are we bringing them forward? And so, you know, wherever we are in our lives, can we look at ourselves as sharing our wisdom and experiences with others? I mean, that's really the kind of meaning behind it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. You did refer to elders as 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, which seems like a little bit of a wide range. I mean,
it is kind of, and this is the funny thing. I mean, honestly, we went back and forth, and I just think there are men in their 40s who are thinking about it. And mm-hmm. so it's like, okay, you can engage in this conversation, and, you know, are you preparing, are you feeling, you know, are you looking to the future, and are you feeling changes that are coming in, and do you want to engage now with men in their 60s and begin to see what, you know, what's ahead and look for direction and help and guidance. And so, yeah, we'll see. We'll, you know, there's no hard and fast rules, you know, I mean, we'll see how it plays out.
And Sean, that program is funded, right? We have a funder who's interested.
Well, what I'll just say about it is elders, there's the elders, and then there's the bridge, which is a program that we're also launching that's focused on men in their early 20s. Similar, we call it the bridge because the idea is, okay, now you move from this stage of your life to another, maybe graduating college or moving on to a new job. And we've been funded by the Eisner Foundation to really link the two and do some generational overlap and engagement between guys in the elders and guys in the bridge. And so more to come on that.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, this may have seemed like a tangent, but it is all related to a lot of the work that Shana does. And I'm excited for the listeners to hear from Shana.
Yep. Here we go.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, you guys are on the East Coast, aren't you?
No.
Negative. I'm Midwest.
I'm south of you.
Oh. Wait. So it's early where you are, too.
Yes, for me. Chris is in Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah, so, Shana, Chris, Shana.
Hi, Shana. Hi, nice to meet you.
Good to meet you.
Yeah. So wait, where exactly are you?
I'm in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, you are? Yeah. Are you native to that part of the world?
No. No, I actually grew up in Buffalo, New York, and spent a couple decades in California, and then only recently came here.
So you're like, oh, I'd rather have moderate and wet than cold and wet. Just kidding. I love
I'd rather have moderate and wet and not fire as much fire danger than, you know.
Exactly. It's all part of the calculus. I get it.
Totally.
I actually still thought you were in California. I totally whiffed on that. Yeah. I don't know why.
I feel it's weird. Like when I, you know, I'm definitely here, but when I say where I am, it feels weird to say Oregon somehow because I just spent so much time in California. So,
Okay. Can we unpack this just a little bit more? So how long have you been there and why did you end up there?
I have been here. Wow. It's going to be 3 years this summer.
Okay.
And yeah, it was, you know, fire danger. I have a kid who is trans, and I wanted, California was okay, but I also, it was like fire. I couldn't afford a house as a single parent and all the things. And then wanted to find somewhere else that was also, you know, going to be supportive for my kid and all of that.
Makes sense.
Has it turned out to be that way?
Yeah. Yeah.
It has. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Good. Did you have older kids, Sean, right? Chris, do you have kids?
I'm right in the middle. Well, maybe I'm not in the middle. I don't know how old your child is. I have an 18-year-old, almost 19, and a 15-year-old. Two girls.
Okay.
Yep.
Great. I have a 12-year-old. So yeah, you're just a little ahead.
Yeah, mine are old.
Yours are older.
Yeah.
Older.
Like me, older. Yeah. Than you two.
Oldish.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not
all right. What are we going to talk about today?
What are we doing, you guys?
What are we going to talk about today?
We love it so much.
You know, I could go so many different ways. I started, Why don't I ask you, where do you want to start today?
I mean, my answer always is, you know, I want to talk about whatever's going to serve your guys, yeah. But, I guess I'm curious. Like I listened to what your, interview was, his name, Saeed, the younger guy.
Saeed Hill from Northwestern.
So awesome.
Yeah. Great guy.
Yeah. He's really cool.
Yeah. So I got, you know, the just conversational style. And I guess I'm curious. I haven't looked to see, you know, have you had a lot of women on, and what do you think would best serve them in that regard?
Yes. We're about half and half now, aren't we?
Oh, wow.
Chris,
I'm going to pull it up. I don't have it open, but I will pull it
one
up.
One thing you need to know about Chris, he's very analytical. So he's got all kinds of,
he's going to know exactly.
He's broken it down in a lot of different ways.
Sean, I think, Shana, in case you don't know this, yep. I mean, yes, when our podcast does serve the men of Men Living and the men who listen to our podcast, that's great.
Yeah.
But at its heart, this is a very selfish endeavor.
Totally. Right.
Sean and I do this for us.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't do it, like, it wouldn't be good for us if we didn't have interesting people. So the interesting part of our guests, like you, can vary widely. And so we just want to talk about, like, what's on your mind. And if it helps our guys, great.
Well, is there anything that you guys are like, is burning for you then, you know, as you're thinking?
Yeah.
About-
so let's start with you first. All right. Okay. So you are a therapist and a coach, author.
I'm a coach, not a therapist technically, okay. But yes, I'm a coach.
And you decided to focus on guys, right? True.
Yeah.
So I know it's on the website, but why don't you tell the audience why you focus on men?
Oh my God, we're already recording.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
We go hot.
Yeah. Right away.
Yeah. I don't know how you
do
your podcast.
I just looked up to see that little red button, little red dot. I was like, oh, okay. Anyway.
We think it's kind of a test for the audience, is that they get through, if they're very interested, they'll get through this. And then they'll get to the hat of what we're going to talk about.
Well, you know, part of my goal in the world is to be vulnerable and honest and to, you know, to go first in that way so that other people can feel safe too. So great. You know, now I didn't even have to know I was doing it. Anyway. Okay. So I decided to work with men about 20 something years ago when I was part of an intentional community. And I was in my early 20s or early to mid 20s. And it was like the San Francisco second hippie wave, you know, and we were all doing programs like, you know, Est and Landmark and all kinds of tantra, you know, communication, man-woman dynamics, all that stuff. And we were having this experience that, you know, we would have these, like, our commitment was to not go away when we made messes with each other. And so we would have these jealousy and upset. I remember there was a guy who I had sex with, and we like looked at each other after and we were like, I don't think that was for us. It was like, something's going to happen in our community as a result. And now we're supposed to, like, you know, work with it or, you know, whatever. And so it did. It turned out someone else was jealous. And then so anyway, the guys in this community were so impacted and felt like they were more free to be themselves, and they were feeling stronger, clearer, more confident, that they then created a course for other men to go through to get honest and loving feedback from women. Mm. And so that was like the initial beginnings where I suddenly was doing these workshops, you know, many weekends a year where men would come in and they would just open their hearts and be vulnerable, and that we were a team of women who was giving them honest and loving feedback about not who they should be, but the impact that they were having on us. Mm-hmm. So that they would know, like, what is it that women aren't saying to me, even though they're walking away or saying no, or, you know, whether they're single or in relationship, that women were having negative responses to them and they didn't understand why. So it was fascinating and deep and changed my life for sure.
Well, I just maybe quickly. Shana, if you could paint the picture a little bit more about this feedback loop, like what was the context? Was it several men, several women? Was it one man, several women? And I really appreciate the fact that it was like feedback about how the effect that the man is having the on the women, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, maybe just like flesh it out a little
yeah.
bit more.
So it was a little bit of like an amoeba. Like in the beginning, I think there were two men and two women, and then I met them. And so then, you know, I was the third woman. And then we probably eventually were up to maybe 15 people. And also part of in San Francisco, there were all these communities having parties and events and things, so that were like hundreds and hundreds of people. So it was like we were also a smaller community in the midst of large communities. That paints a picture.
So is that course kind of the basis of your work?
Is it
the foundation?
It's the foundation, right? It started my work. And at some point I created a course for women to do the same thing, where mm-hmm. they would get feedback, honest and loving feedback from men, and get to work through certain dynamics. And now, yeah, I mean, it's that. It's also, I've had a spiritual practice for probably almost 20 years also that is based a lot in inquiry and, you know, curiosity and just going deep within oneself to understand like what's really here right now and what's happening. And I'm just constantly studying, you know, communication and positive intelligence and all kinds of things that I bring into the work.
Yeah. I ask about it as being the foundation, because reading the book on his sex, it's, you know, it's some big takeaways, but for me, you know, you take a couple of definitions, but you say honesty, the ability to know and reveal what were you feeling, thinking, wanting. So much, you know, so much of it seems simple, right? All we have to do is say the words, communicate. Yeah. But the fear and the fear, the lack of self-awareness, I mean, all these things that keep us from being honest and open and making, I think in the end, it easier to connect. It's so hard. So, you know, the state of men today, as you work with them, you know, what are the barriers? What are the issues? Because it seems like it would be so easy, but both people have to be willing to be honest and open.
And I think before we go into barriers, maybe just talking about that, because, you know, I talk about mature honesty versus, I didn't want to call it immature honesty and be judgmental, but there is a way where it's like, okay, you can just say, well, I'm just telling it like it is. And, you know, I'm just being honest.
Right.
And it can be shaming, blaming, attacking, right. You know, all of that. And that doesn't, to me, it's not a kind of honesty that creates intimacy. So yes, when you think about, all right, what is honesty? And I agree with you. Oftentimes when my clients say like, well, how am I going to say, you know, I don't really feel attracted to you when this happens. I'm like, well, you could say it exactly like that. So let's look, like, now we have to go back deeper and see what are the fears, like you said, what would have you not say it like that, right? Yeah. Oh, I'm afraid of offending people. I'm afraid of abandonment. I'm afraid of all these things. I'm afraid it makes me look weak. You know, a lot of men do come to me and think, well, if I don't know a woman already, you know, if I don't know what she likes and what she wants and how she works, then there's something wrong with me. And I'm like, well, okay, first of all, good luck, because every woman is different and every moment is different. And
well, and you can't, you can't be a mind reader. I mean, that's like being a mind reader, right?
Yeah.
It's just,
well, yeah. And even that one, right? So if a woman expects, now this is heterosexual relationships and, you know, mm-hmm. it can be any gender, but say somebody expects you to read their mind, and then you get all worked up, like, you can't expect me to, you know, read your mind. Now we're both in our defensive parts. And so now it's going to escalate and, uh-huh. you know, it's, or downward spiral. Right. Yeah. But if somebody's expecting something of us and we have enough sovereignty and self-respect and self-love to say like, oh, I totally get how you would want me to read your mind. And if I could, I would. And like, you know, what I'd really love is for us to work together to understand your body, your heart, our patterns, our dynamics. Like, you know, will you do that with me? And sometimes it takes working through like, here's where I'm feeling stuck and here's where I'm feeling stuck. But if we can do that with respect and care and connection, then it can be really healing and powerful.
So the only thing that I would have a tough time is the piece that says, I can totally understand how you would want me to read your mind. It's like,
right. So what gets in the way for you there?
Just because it's, part of it would be, okay, am I not being sensitive enough to what's going on that I'm not picking up clues or whatever? But then the other side of it is just talk to me. I just think it's like so much easier for us to get through it if we're just talking about it, whatever it might be.
I mean, one of the things I try to support people in is kind of standing in someone else's shoes. And so to be able to say something like, okay, I can imagine being you and I can imagine why you would want this, right? There's something where when we can open our hearts and have empathy for another person, then they tend to have more empathy for us. But it's also, it's honest to say, I'm having a really hard time understanding how you could want me to read your mind because I don't think that that's what humans do. Then we get into the tone, right? Are you saying it from a place of, care and connection? Or are you saying it from a place of, well, fuck you for wanting that from me?
Right. Yes, totally.
I am sorry if I'm being slow in the uptake here, but
no, it's good.
So you described sort of your entry into this line of work and this group of people where feedback was exchanged in a group setting. And now we're talking and Sean brings up this idea. Well, just tell me how I'm making you feel or whatever. My guess is somewhere in your coaching, you talk about setting the conditions for enabling this type of communication. Because we all know, we've all been in a relationship. You can't always just be like, oh, fuck, if you just tell me, then everything will be okay. Or if I, because there's times when I don't want to talk. I say the things that I should probably say too. So like, is that part of what the men you work with and men you don't work with like us need to know?
Yes. Right. And that it's okay to not want to talk. And again, if we go back to the tone, right, how are you communicating that? Are you saying, are you just leaving and huffing off, or are you actually saying like, hey, I need a couple of minutes or I need a day or something, right? So yeah, oftentimes when I'm working with men around relationship dynamics, I have to, again, go meta and say, okay, how are your conversations going? And do you have any agreements about how your conversations are going to go and how you treat each other? And so, I've been teaching a class over the past year, like in six different parts around the essential conversations and to create, I think I called it sexual confidence and deeper connections with women, or, better connections with women. And part of it is setting the context. Why are we having this conversation? What do I actually want out of it? And then the next part is creating the safety, right? Like, okay, do we want to take turns talking and neither one of us interrupts each other? Do we need to use I statements, and nonviolent communication style? Like, how do we want to communicate when we, and then even further back, if you want to say, well, in our relationship, when we have an upset, what do we want to do with it? Because I think a lot of people, right, never have that conversation and then get stuck in that same pattern again and again.
I'm thinking now about like couples therapy. And I wonder if your clients' partners ever come to meet with you with them.
Yeah, sometimes they do.
Okay. Because it'd be one thing if like you told me I should do something or we should do something and I took that home, but it's important, I think, to hear it from the independent coach/observer's mouth.
Yeah. I mean, oftentimes I will say it goes both ways. There are times when hearing it and doing the work on your own or, learning about yourself and responding in a different way, it stops that downward spiral from happening. And then there can actually be more intimacy. And then there are also times where people's partners are so far gone, or there's so much, history or baggage or so much disconnection between them that it either doesn't work, right? They don't create the kind of relationship they want, but then they know how to create what they do want in the future. The partner will come to me and then we start having certain conversations. And, recently working with a couple, it was like, I realized I had one session with both of them and then separately so I could get a sense of what was going on. And then in the next session, when they came back together, I was like, okay, So there's not a lot of trust happening here between the two of you. So we really need to look at what is it going to take, right? What is it going to take to trust each other again, or to even trust in the possibility that we could have this intimate relationship again? Because without that as a foundation, you know, everything we try to, every exercise we try to do or whatever, it's just going to be met with disbelief or upset or, well, this isn't going to happen. So, you know, why bother?
That's an interesting point. I'm curious about, have you, you know, do you get into these situations where you're like, okay, this, and you say it in the book, this is not a relation, this is not a relationship that's going to happen, right? I mean, it's, I mean, you make an assessment that either that trust is not going to be built, or the communication isn't there, or the just, it's not going to happen. And you talk about walking away from relationships in the book. And I'm just curious about how often you see that, and what your thought is about how hard two people should work on keeping something together that honestly shouldn't be together.
I know. It's so complicated. There's so many shades of gray, right? Because, you know, couples I work with who they've been together for decades, and there's a lot of love and care and connection, and but maybe the sex isn't happening, or they don't, you know, some dynamic, someone's not feeling safe. It's like, I'm always, if somebody wants to work on their relationship, I will always support them to say, okay, I'm going to do everything I can, you know, to help you make this happen. And if the choice ends up being that you two are going to separate or start over with someone else, you know, I'll support that too. I went through a divorce, and my ex and I are, you know, we just spent a bunch of time together this weekend with our kid, and we're having a holiday dinner tonight with our kid. And like, it took us a little while, but there's a lot of respect. And to me, it's, you know, transitioning form of relationship is an option. So I think it's very unique and individual, but at this point I feel like, you know, if people are really in the fight with each other, I will send them to a therapist. I feel like I work better for people who are, you know, we really want this and we're struggling. We don't exactly know how, and we're both self-reflective and we're both working on ourselves and willing to take responsibility, but there's still something in the way.
Hey listeners, if you enjoy our show, please consider following us or sharing the show with a friend. And I want to take a quick second to shout out our sponsor, Half Acre Beer Company, from their iconic Daisy Cutter Pale Ale to the refreshing Bodum IPA. All of the beers that these guys are making are a testament to quality and to their passion for brewing. So cheers to Half Acre Beer Company for supporting if you've come this far and for brewing great beers. And now let's get back to the show. I'm going to revert to my nerd side real quick. Part of me wants to think, okay, well, Shayna, I'm so sorry.
You know, it's hard with Sean and Shayna.
I know, you two guys. Shayna is succeeding when her clients are leaving the nest and going off. And on the other hand, you're like, oh, there's probably clients who probably shouldn't be leaving, and they're leaving too soon. Where I'm going with this is, like, do you have a sense for your success rate, or how would you think about measuring success?
That's a good question, because it has been a little in that gray zone. I mean, the way I think about success usually, and because I do often work with more single people or people who are dating or starting over than people who are in couples. So I often think of it like, you know, if you have a sense of your own goodness or greatness, and you are not, we all beat ourselves up to some degree, right? But if you can actually catch yourself and witness that, and then come back to self-love and a sense of, okay, I know who I am, I know what I want, I know what's important to me, and I can actually communicate it most of the time without going into a shame spiral, right? I will say, you know, I'm in a relationship right now that I've been in for a year and a half, and it's still vulnerable to bring up certain conversations. So it's not like there's no fear or no shame or no, you know, any of that. But I also am not willing to, I'm not willing to lose myself. And I'm also not willing to make someone else, you know, wrong, bad, and evil. And so I really think of it more internally. Like, I don't market myself as a self-love coach because that's not really what people are looking for. But ultimately, I do feel like when you get to a place where there's nothing to prove, right? There's nothing to prove. There's no way you have to be that you actually appreciate your own uniqueness and you're willing to grow and learn and you're willing to collaborate with others in a way that's, you know, enlivening and respectful and supportive. I think that's how I think about success.
That's the exclamation, you know, put an exclamation point on that. Cause that to me, that's the, you know, one of the huge takeaways from your work is, you know, you gotta have confidence, right? I mean, you have to be like, okay, I'm starting with, I'm good. And this is who I am and accepting that. So you say you don't want to market it as self-love, but there's a lot of self-love in this. Because once you can get there, I mean, just the interaction with a significant other or anyone. And that's, I think the other thing so about different. This book, it's not just about sex. It's about living your life completely. So I just want to put an exclamation point on that one for sure.
I was going to say the exact same thing. I think we, you know, what we do in Men Living is also,
I was just going
to
say that
has a lot to do with like making people accepting of themselves. And of course there's this other thing that comes after that, which may be dependent on that, which is like empathy, which is probably number two on the list or maybe tied for first. But yeah, getting someone to be okay with themselves is huge. So yeah, I wouldn't discount that.
Yeah. And I want to say too, for me, confidence is not you know, I got this, right? Yeah. Confidence is, I actually trust myself. I trust myself to meet whatever is showing up with, you know, as much openness as I can and with curiosity and with empathy, like you said, right? So that it's not like I know how to do everything and I'm, you know, a macho guy. It's that deep inner sense of self-trust, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a great point. Sean, I don't know if you remember, but Kate Milliken said at one point that she's gotten really comfortable with the things she's not good at.
Yeah.
And sort of that's not confidence necessarily, right? That's pure self-love.
Acceptance.
Yeah.
But in a way, right, if we redefine confidence, it's like, okay, I'm good. I got myself, which, you know, again, I did a TED talk called, What 1,000 Men's Tears Reveal about the crisis between men and women. And there's a difference, right, between when if a man is expressing or any, let's say a person of any gender is expressing some kind of vulnerability. And if you're not good with yourself, then it's like, oh God, I'm sorry. I can't believe I'm saying this. You know, now I'm awful. You're going to want to leave me. All the things. Or we just run and don't say it at all because, you know, some people do that too. Versus, hey, I know I'm a good person and this part right now I'm really struggling with, or this is hard for me and I'm not giving it to you that you need to fix me or you need to take care of it. But, you know, maybe I'm requesting, can we look at this together or would you support me in this way? Or would you just have some empathy for the fact that, you know, I'm not at my best in this moment?
Mm-hmm. Shayna, I'm inclined to ask you the canned question about what your next book is going to be. But maybe you have an answer to that, but I guess more broadly, I'm curious about like what, when you think about what else you should write and that people need to read and people need to hear, like what is the next most important thing?
Well, that's so interesting. Cause I don't know if people want to read this, but, it's similar to you guys doing the podcast, right? For your own, your own design, your own learning. What tends to be, I would say, on my heart, maybe even more than my mind is, and what I've imagined writing is a book called Sacred Sex. And what's funny is like, it doesn't all need to be about sex. So I'm not sure why, because even with Honest Sex, I was like, I don't really want to call it that. You know, it's too, there's too much sex in it. I'm not a sex coach necessarily, though I do feel like, you know, oftentimes that's in a big part what people come to me for, or intimacy, you know, or phrased as sex. But you know, there's a part of me that really is into the sacredness and what does it take to actually up-level a relationship to the point where it's not just that we're honest with each other, we're intimate in a way that goes beyond, I think, what most of our culture talks about.
So on this book, you have a chapter that says, what is sex actually? So,
yeah.
All right. So let's, so what is sex, Shana?
Is this where we ask Shana to do a book reading for us?
What is sex? Well, okay. So to me, and I've been talking about, I was actually helping facilitate a class this week with another woman who's a, she's actually more of a spiritual teacher, and she was doing a class on her framing of sex. And we both agreed that, you know, many people conflate intimacy and sex, or many people think about sex as only this physical act, or only, when I looked it up in Webster's dictionary, it was like, it was just horrific. I almost started crying. It was like, you know, first of all, it was completely just heterosexual. Second of all, it was like, you know, penis entering vagina. And I was like, wow, this is really where most of us, you know, haven't had this expansive education of, oh my God, sex can be any way that we intimately connect with another person, and it can be energetic and it can be physical, but there's also, you know, intimate, like emotional. So I talk about it as one-dimensional sex versus four-dimensional sex, or kind of fast food versus gourmet, right? Where it's like the one-dimensional is that physical act. And then if you add more dimensions to it, there's the energetic experience, there's the emotional experience, there's the, I feel you so much that I'm actually feeling what you're feeling, and you're feeling what I'm feeling. And there's a kind of union or spiritual experience. And so And that, you know, doesn't, like, two people can sit there and have energetic sex without having any physical contact.
Mm-hmm.
And there can be this emotional, like, you know, orgasms in the heart and all different kinds of experiences that, to me, once we expand that definition, then we're not trying to just go for that physical experience, or just go for climax, because that somehow is the epitome of, you know, a sexual experience.
Why do you think that that's something that people wouldn't want to read?
The sacred sex part?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think, well, you guys were both totally silent after I talked about it. So that was a little bit of a, like, huh, I wonder what's happening.
No.
The wheels are turning. I think it's like everything. I mean, and frankly, based on title alone, I'm probably buying sacred sex before I'm buying honest sex, which doesn't mean I'm dishonest, Sean, right?
Yeah.
I hope not.
Yeah, well, somebody told me I should change the title to, like, hot, honest sex, or, you know, something to actually make it seem like it's going to be good sex.
It's perfect. I think it's a perfect title. Talking about energetic sex. So this is one of the areas, takeaways. And it ties back to, we interviewed Jim Detmer a while back, like at the very beginning. And Jim is, I don't know if you know who he is. He's co-founder mm-hmm. of Conscious Leadership Group. And they have defined really five emotions for them. Joy, fear, sadness, anger, and creative sexual energy.
Oh,
and so I love that. Love the way that they go into it. Yeah. And then, so in the book, you talk about orgasmic energy, you talk about orgasmic lifestyles, which is kind of really about the energetic. And it really felt like a little bit around what Conscious Leadership Group does with creative sexual energy. Is that kind of how you're feeling about it as you're writing about, you know, orgasmic lifestyles, orgasmic energy, that it's
yeah, and the orgasmic lifestyle was, yeah. Well, orgasmic lifestyle was someone who, you know, I quoted her work. It's not necessarily that I'm walking around talking as much about, okay, let's live an orgasmic lifestyle. There are people who really do that. And I think in some ways it's beautiful. But the way I look at it more is, okay, we have energy. We have vitality. We have a life energy flowing through our body.
Mm-hmm.
And my goal for most people, I would say, and maybe for all of my clients, but let's just say most people for now, is, you know, you don't have to shut that down, right? That your energy moves through you, your turn on moves through you. The choice about how do I engage with this, I think, is where respect comes in. But many men come to me shut down and being like, well, I don't want to disrespect someone, so I'm going to turn down my my turn on or my, you know, my sexual vitality, because I don't want to offend someone, which I have deep respect for, you know, when this happens with men. And my encouragement is, okay, let's, you know, help you feel it all, feel all that energy in your body. Because if you turn down the dial on that energy, you're turning down the dial on, like you said, your creative energy and your life force, right? Your vitality. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm more of a vitality person than a orgasmic lifestyle person. But if you expand the definition of orgasm, it's really just, you know, a flow of energy moving through your body that reaches a kind of peak, which in the book I talk about, you know, that there's one kind of orgasm most people think of, and there are other kinds of orgasm, right? And so, you know, we can think about, okay, how, if I'm wanting to live my most vital life, or some people might call it an orgasmic life, you know, how do I keep my energy alive and flowing, which you guys as parents, I would imagine it's not fucking easy. You know, these like suckers of energy around, and then stay and have a business and, you know, do life. And so it takes something to find that in ourselves, first of all, I think, and then to keep it alive.
Yeah. I think you cite 14 types of orgasms in the book, and I'm like, but if I put a checklist together, I don't think I'm even close. But
no. I think that was Susan Bratton is someone who I've known for a very long time back in the San Francisco communities. And she's now, you know, very well known for her work with sex and orgasm. And she has 14 different types of orgasm, which I think are amazing.
We're not keeping score though. So
thank God.
No right or wrong. Yeah. Nope.
I'm curious about the distribution of your clients across age groups. And if you see, you know, I'm always partial to slightly older fellows like ourselves. Like if there's a big difference in what a 28-year-old comes to you needing and what the average 52-year-old comes to you needing.
I love that. Well, first of all, now that I, you know, as I get older, I work with people who are older. So when I was in my 20s, you know, guys would come to me in their 20s, and now I'm working with men in their 40s, 50s, 60s, sometimes even 70s. So I think a lot of times as the men are older and either, starting over, sometimes there's divorce, they're starting over, or sometimes I see it as starting over, even though you're in the same relationship because there's a new phase or a new dynamic. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a lot of, you know, I didn't realize that something was important to me. Like, I'm kind of upset about something, or something's not working in my relationship dynamic. I can't fully pinpoint why, you know, I can tell you what's going on, but I don't fully understand it. So sometimes it's men who are feeling like they're, you know, they're having sex with their partners, but it's just not as satisfying, or the intimacy isn't there. There's not like this daily connection of feeling, loved and wanted. And, you know, sometimes it's just feeling like, I think when I think about most of the people who have come to me in the 40 to 70 range, it's either, I don't really know what I want right now. My body isn't working the same way, and so I don't know how to navigate that. Or there's a dynamic where I'm not having as much love or intimacy, and I didn't even know that that was important to me before, but now it's becoming important to me, and I may not even know how to say that, if that makes sense.
So given the age group that you just mentioned, our friend Jed Diamond wrote a book 27 years ago called Male Menopause.
Yeah.
Do you agree with his assessment that there, you know, men 40 through 70 experience a change?
Because I think, well, a lot of men, again, it's in that kind of fumbly way where it's like something's not right, and oftentimes I'm like, oh, you actually want to be more emotionally connected, and you didn't even know, you kind of didn't know what that was or how to do it, or it didn't make sense to you, it didn't matter as much before, and now, you know, you're looking at your partner thinking, I want more. I want something else that's very intangible or hard to talk about. Yeah. So I think that my guess is that there is a hormonal change there happening where, you know, if the testosterone's a little lower, not running the system as much, and or you don't get to lean on the physicality of your body, is just like, I can 100% depend on, you know, an erection or like having being turned on when I, before it was like the drop of a hat, and now, you know, it's different. And then I think that can bring up a lot of feelings of shame and weakness, and I'm not in control here, which for a lot of men is not a comfortable place to be.
Right. Well,
do the two of you think that there might be something that's even non-hormonal and non-physical, just like you go through life and you're like, oh, I need, I actually want more of this now. And I've had enough of this now.
I think I do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you, Sean?
Yeah. I agree. And I think in Jed's book, he talks about the change for men like women. I mean, I think like all humans, it's not only chemical and hormonal, but there's all kinds of different aspects to it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, okay, if you're eating the same ice cream for 20 years, I mean, it's ice cream. It's good, but it's like, well, what else is out there? What about some sprinkles? And, and you know, sprinkles could be something kind of kinky, or sprinkles could be like, actually, I want to open up my heart to you and feel like you really understand me.
It's how you define it, right? For yourself.
There's the there's the tagline on this episode, right? Something having to do with sprinkles and sex.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that.
So I think I asked the question early, and Chris might have blown it off and went to a different question. So overall, the state of men from your perspective, can you talk about that? Where you think men are?
And I think that was my fault. I don't think it was Chris's fault. I think I went back into the honesty conversation.
I just like blaming it. I like,
thank you, Shayna. Yeah. Thank you, Shayna. Shut up, Sean.
Got to take responsibility you know, for what's happening. Okay. The state of men. Most men who come to me are self-reflective. I mean, all the men who come to me are self-reflective. And so I really appreciate that. I think that I get to work with men who have big hearts and are seeing that there are issues in the world that are not working. You know, they want to, they really want to treat women well if they're in heterosexual relationships or just in the world. And I think because the men who come to me tend to have big hearts and want to do good in the world, there's also a lot of confusion of like, well, shit, you know, now I don't even know what I can say and what I can't say without being offensive or getting sued. Or so I think, you know, there is confusion in that way. And then I think, I'm just thinking about the men who've come to me. I've worked with a couple younger men recently who kind of blew their minds talking about, oh, there are all these different kinds of sex, or there's a different way of, you know, intimacy or connection. Like a guy who grew up in the military and, you know, didn't really have any sense of that and what was possible, and actually talking to a partner about these emotional things versus the, you know, just the physical, or just like everything kind of just being separate or in your own world and not having that kind of communication. So I don't know. I see good things for men. Definitely. I see a lot of men. And since I've been doing this in the past 20 years, more and more men's organizations, you know, amazingly like yours, that are bringing men together to have these conversations. And I think that's really, really important. And then I also see that it can still be very confusing. When you go to a men's circle and you're having these conversations with men, and then you go home to this, like, seems like another species if you're in a heterosexual relationship, and you're just like, what the fuck, you know, how do I translate this? How do I make this happen?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you call it, the man mold on your site?
Man box.
It's, I mean, that conditioning's hard to break, right?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's constant from the time we're born.
Totally.
And there was a side of me that thought that, or a notion that was changing for younger men now in 2024, but I'm not sure that's true, actually.
I see both. I mean, I think it also depends on who you're raised by and where you live in the country and, you know, or the world and what's happening around you.
Mm-hmm.
Because whatever examples you're getting, you know, that's what you take to be reality. And that's what's being a strong man or a good person. So, yeah, I think it depends on where people are.
I have to ask this question. You started out studying psychology. You could have gone the route of being a therapist, right? But you didn't. And at the same time, there's one of the things I think that is true of many men is that we don't have good help-seeking behavior, right? We don't ask for directions. We don't go get our annual physical. I wonder if you have any insight into, I mean, are you getting more clients because you're a coach and you're not a psychologist?
That's a good question. Probably not. I don't know. I feel like in a way I shot myself in the foot when I decided to work more with men because, you know, all the women I know, anytime we go see a healer or a therapist or someone, we're like, you have to go see this person, you know? And so in a way, I feel like I probably, you know, have fewer clients than I would maybe. I don't know if as a therapist or not, but I also think my desire in being a coach rather than a therapist is I wanted to be able to be more human. You know, to me, it feels more like human practice. And I didn't want to be bound by the like, okay. There are therapists who do that now too, but I didn't want to be bound by the, I have to be over here and I'm more of a listener versus a participant. Because to me, it's like, I want men to practice connecting with me in a way that they then know how to take it back to their relationships to create a kind of depth or emotional intimacy, you know, rather than, yes, we do look at your past and how things came to be, but it's also like, okay, how do you have that conversation and how do you create the kind of depth and intimacy you want?
Yeah, it would strike me, and I'm curious again with your clients, that they can have that conversation with you, but if their partner is not as open as you are, and I don't know if you take on a role during those.
Sometimes I do take on a role to challenge that.
Because then they're leaving your office and it's like, I leave and I got nothing, you know, they're trying to practice.
But what happens is, again, it's like even some of these small changes. So if you learn how to not defend yourself in a conversation, right? Say that would be the slide into the downward spiral. But mm-hmm. I had someone, I think I talked about this in the book, where he said, I went back to my wife and when she asked me to take out the garbage, instead of telling her to stop nagging me, I was like, okay, you know, I'm on it. I got it. I can see that this matters to you. And then it created this whole upward spiral, right? So I often joke, my dad, it's so funny. My dad is often like, what advice do you give men? And I'm like, well, I try not to give advice, but the advice that I want to give to you and to other men out there who, you know, don't do the thing, like who don't actually understand, like my dad has bought my mom a plant for Valentine's Day for the past 40 something years. And my mom's always like, I want flowers. And he's like, yeah, but these last longer. You know? And I'm like, okay, if you want to know why you're not having the sex you want to have, then freaking, you know, buy the woman some damn flowers. Like actually, and really it's not about the plant or the flowers, but being able to see from her, right? Stand in her shoes and what, like attune to her and understand her. Yeah. Uh-huh. It changes things a lot.
That is a hilarious anecdote. Oh my God.
He did actually one time come to me and say, how do I get your mom to stop yelling at me? And, you know, I've tried for decades to figure out what's going on with them and help them. And I've given up, but I'm like, you know, if you are one of those nice, amazing men who has such a big heart and you don't stand up for yourself and you don't actually get clear, these are the boundaries, right? Like you don't have to rudely say you can't talk to me like that. But if there are dynamics where they're unconscious and they're disrespectful and you're putting up with things like that, it's not going to go well for either one of you. Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting thing, you know, talking about standing up for yourself versus the potential alternative being not, and then letting that lead you down this spiral, which is clearly, I think we all agree, is unhealthy. I'm curious if the notion of love languages comes into your coaching very much.
Totally. Just the other day, I had a couple who, you know, she was like, I really want to hear more that you love me and you want me. And I could feel he was kind of like, he didn't roll his eyes, but it was almost right. It was a little bit just like, and then he said something like, and I was like just about to say, oh, I think there's a love language thing here. And he was like, but you know, there are things I do for you. And I was like, right. Okay. So he's doing
acts of service. Yeah.
Right? She's wanting words of affirmation. And so it's not that neither one of you is trying to love the other. You're just not necessarily loving the other in the way that they want to be in those moments. And yeah. I think it does. It takes a generosity of spirit to step up and be like, I don't like saying those things, but okay, I know my partner wants this. I was re-listening. I started listening to Stan Tatkin's book again, Your Brain on Love, more like attachment theory and stuff. And he talks about how in a way we've gotten overly independent. And when we can actually be a couple who is supporting each other to feel loved and to feel connected, that, you know, it goes a long way.
Well, it also goes back to something you said early in the call, which is like just giving the feedback about how you doing this makes me feel. I love that you did this act of service and it's not scratching the itch that I need to have scratched, right?
Yeah, right. I love that you're doing this. Yeah. Thank you so much. And I noticed that like I felt a little sad today and there's a part of me really longing to hear you say, I love you. And you know, it's coming from a vulnerable, this is the honesty, the vulnerable honesty. It's coming from vulnerability, not from, thanks so much that you did that thing, but like, what I really want is this and you're not doing it. And I'm pissed, right?
Yeah. Well, cause there, in that situation, there would be the also in a perfect couple, which is fantasy, of course, but the other party would truly appreciate what the dude who took the trash out thought he was doing, right? You don't want to discount that either. Anyway.
Yeah. I was going to say, I have another couple I've been working with and it's that same thing of the man who was taught I should be the provider and for decades, you know, and then the woman feeling alone emotionally. And then, right. Then they've got to try to work this out where it's like, right. How do you actually appreciate each other for what the other did, especially because none of us were given a rule book and none of us were taught how to do this. And so then there's water under the bridge and some baggage of, but you know, it still hurts. And what do I do with the hurt? And so I actually sometimes have men, you know, vent with me too. I'm like, all right, let's get it out. Let's say it. Cause if you don't say it somewhere, it just eats you up inside. And so you've got to say
spiral
it.
Spiral thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, just to preface that it has to be done correctly, but you know, we talk about men living five suggestions and one of them is living candidly, living honestly. I think it's the same thing. Yeah. It's just, I hate prefacing anything with radical, but it's almost like it's almost like radical candidness is like a foundational thing. If you want to be in relationship with someone forever, right? Forever.
Yeah. Otherwise it just gets dull. And if you think, you know, the person you're in relationship with versus, okay, we're discovering each other anew, right? It does get dull. And it's hard to say some of those things. I, for myself, because I'm not the greatest at speaking up about things that bother me or upset me, I often set up check-ins with a partner, you know, every 2 weeks or sometimes every month, sometimes every week, where it's like, all right, how are you doing? How am I doing? Let's talk about this. Let's see, you know, is there anything? Cause sometimes it doesn't even arise until that moment, but then I realize, I've been a little disconnected, or I've been a little colder, or I've been a little something. Okay. Why is that? What is happening for me? What am I worried about? And not all of it do we have to talk about with our partner. Sometimes it's great to talk about with someone else, a friend or a coach or a men's circle or whatever, but I do often find at the end of those conversations, when they are respectful and vulnerable, that we feel closer.
Oh, yeah. It's so funny. You talked about what we did or didn't learn how to do growing up. And it took me back to the sort of like Merriam-Webster dictionary, you know, definition of orgasm or whatever else. That's how we learned a lot of this shit when we were growing up in the 70s and the 80s, right?
Cosmo. Cosmo magazine and then Playboy. And right. Uh-huh. I don't know. I didn't look at Playboy as much, but most of my guy friends were looking at Playboy.
Sprinkle in a little Encyclopedia Britannica.
I was going to say, no, Chris was reading the dictionary.
Sean's reading Playboy and I'm reading Cosmo.
Yeah, right.
Well, you guys, that paints me in such a poor light. Why did you say
it? What about the Encyclopedia Britannica? Did you have that whole series? Oh, I mean, I definitely looked up sex in there.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He definitely did.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right,
he loved those pictures.
the drawings, the pen and ink drawings.
Yeah.
Okay, Shayna, I actually have to hop, and I apologize. I wish I had more time. Who knows? You probably have to hop too. You probably have a coaching client, but we do ask these canned questions at the end of our episodes. Okay. Are you game?
I'm game.
Yeah, actually, yeah, you've signed the paperwork, so you have to follow through.
I don't know what paperwork I signed, but I'm game. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So first question is, what do you wish you could have told your 10-year-old self?
Oh, I wish I could have told my 10-year-old self that kids were going to have all different kinds of ideas about me that were going to be judgments, and they're going to call you a prude, and they're going to call you a slut, and they're going to tell you all these things, and none of it fucking matters. Like, that what really matters is, and again, I go back to the word sacred, like, you know, your body is sacred and your heart is sacred, and treat them that way, and really just engage with people who treat you well.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Second question is, do you have a mantra in life or a mantra these days?
Ooh, I don't know if I have a specific like way that I say it, but the idea is that anything and everything that happens is an opportunity for growth or learning or evolving, you know? So I really try to sit with that in the moment when I'm like, oh fuck, I don't know if I can do this one. And then I'm like, oh yeah. Right. There's something here. It's like my soul curriculum in a way.
Just on the side, do you have a coach?
I have many people who right now, the person I see the most is, she's 80 years old. She's part of my spiritual practice, which is the Diamond Approach. Mm-hmm. And so it's this psychological, spiritual, she's been through all kinds of different, you know, psychological trainings and spiritual training. So she's the one I see the most, but I'm usually going in and out of all different kinds of programs with coaches. And cause I'm just one of those people who's constantly seeking.
I wish we had more time just so I could explore more of your day to day there in Portlandia. Cause that's my imagining. But here's the last question for you, Shayna. What do you hope that people will say about you at your wake?
I think what I hope people will say about me is that being around me helped them love themselves more.
Mm. That's a good one.
Right back to self-love. That was very strategic of you, the way you did that.
I think that is like, you know, if I really feel into purpose, like my purpose of being alive on this planet, I feel like it is that. It is that self-love.
That's a great purpose, vocation. If people say that about us, then we'd be psyched. I mentioned your next book, and you talked about one sort of flippantly. Is there another book? Is there anything else you want to share?
I don't know. I actually was in a workshop recently and just outlined that whole book. So, but I don't have any sense of, you know, I'm going to sit down and write it soon. But the last one too was just like suddenly I was doing it. So we'll see. I mean,
how long did it take you to write on
a set? It was a year and a half or so. Yeah, I had some good guidance and good support. So it was a relatively quick process, which now looking back, I'm like, I don't even know how I did that. But yeah,
I highly recommend it. There's a lot of good, not only just for sex, but just for living your life.
That was, I like that you made that point, right? It's not just about sex. It's really about living in general.
Mm-hmm.
Great stuff. Well, this has been delightful.
Guys. And thank you for the work that you're doing with men. It's so important. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of men getting together and getting to be honest and vulnerable and have a safe space for that. And I think that is really part of the foundation of self-love, is getting to see, oh my God, I'm not not so different from anyone else. I'm not worse than someone else. I just, nobody's ever talked about this with me or admitted that this is what's going on.
Yes.
I agree. All right. Thanks. We'll see you soon.
Hope so.
Yeah. Bye, Shane.
Bye, Shane. Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you.
This is Chris. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of If You've Come This Far.
And this is Sean. Remember to check us out at menliving.org.